This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time is brought to you by Bluehost. Start your own blog or website in minutes for the very low price of just $6.95 per month. Bluehost makes it super easy. One-click installation of WordPress, your own .com domain, and no worries about bandwidth. Go to sqpn.com/bluehost for more information. And by the Amazon store. Click on the link on our website before you shop at Amazon, and your purchase will help support our show. Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. We're approaching the end of Season 1. We're approaching the mind-blowing finale of the season, at least according to some of the actors that star in it. And today we're going to talk about the stranger, August, or what is his real name? What is his real identity? Of course, you've seen the episode by now, and so we all know it's Pinocchio. And to talk about Pinocchio and his story, I am joined today by three of our regular suspects, Shelley and Lisa. Good morning. I guess it's
howdy-do.
Is it still morning over there in Texas, or is it afternoon?
It's noon, so
we're on the verge of the afternoon. Also joining us today, David Hantlos. Hey, David.
Hey, Father.
Not joining us today, unfortunately, is Deborah. She's a bit under the weather, but she's in the chat room lurking. So if she has any Disney references that we have missed, then I'm pretty sure she will chime in via text. And I hope she will be better very soon. So we're not going to do a big recap of the story, because we'll just assume that everyone who has seen the episode will only then listen to our podcast. Otherwise, you're going to be really spoiled and it's not going to be much fun. So, Pinocchio, most of our predictions came out, right? Regarding August.
Yeah, I think
mine
I think
did.
What was your prediction?
No, I was talking to Lisa before, and I said, remember I kept saying that August is going to turn out to be the little boy that found her on the side of the road.
Yes, exactly. And turned out to be Pinocchio, which we've been saying for a while now.
Yeah, that wasn't a big surprise, but the way they developed the story with him was kind of a surprise, so that was a lot of fun.
We got to see the whale, which I didn't expect. The moment they jumped
they did
into,
slide that in, didn't they?
Yeah, and it definitely was. It was interesting to see that they jumped into Pinocchio's story with that raft on the sea, with the big whale and even the teeth. And it was exactly what was depicted on the painting in Mr. Gold's office. And there were more links between what we see in Mr. Gold's place and the story of Pinocchio. There was one big object, of course, and that was a clock that had to be repaired by Geppetto. And so it's always cool to see how much they can stuff in that pawn shop of Mr. Gold. You'd think that the people that live in Storybrooke just have nothing in their living rooms anymore. It's all in Mr. Gold's possession.
Well,
they said once that he owns
no one's
a town,
ever.
So.
Go ahead.
And it's interesting that no one ever recognizes any of the stuff. They stand there, they linger, they look at it, like Charming and the Mobile or different things. And I guess because of the curse.
It must be Mr. Gold's charming personality.
I said maybe that's why they're always in his shop, is because they feel connection. They feel like something's in there they know. They just don't know what it is.
Could be.
But by definition, it's a shop. So does anyone ever actually purchase anything?
I think Henry is the only character that we know that has ever purchased something there, the welcome back present for Mary Margaret, but that's about it.
Yeah.
Well, let's follow the story and talk about the things that we noticed and things that make us think, and there was a lot in this episode again. The first thing that we always have to look at is the logo screen, you know, with the blue forest, and then there's always something in there that points to the theme of the episode. And in this case, of course, it was Jiminy Cricket and a cut-off tree on the left side. And, of course, Jiminy Cricket, that's kind of obvious in this episode. And the cut-off tree refers, of course, to the magic tree or should I say the magic trees in this episode? But we'll talk about that a little bit later. We learn that Emma is involved in this, or is actually on the verge of starting this big custody battle over Henry, of course. It seems like she finally made a choice that this is what she is supposed to do. And it kind of blocks out anything else. And it took a while for her, actually, to get to this point that she wants Henry back. And what do you think is a trigger moment for her to get to this point?
Well, I think it was the fact that Regina was willing to go so far in framing Mary Margaret for the death of Catherine that she's looking at, this is the woman that's raising my child, that she's never really thought of Henry as her child before, but she's seeing how evil Regina is, that she's willing to stoop at nothing.
And of course, she doesn't know that's
the right person to be teaching and raising her child.
That's probably it. Yeah, it's some kind of a protection mechanism where her motherly feelings are stirred by the fact that her son is no longer neutral territory, if it ever was. But she realizes that this lady is not just a bad example, but she's plain out dangerous because she can actually do anything.
It's not like anything you see in the normal world. This goes beyond, you know, manipulation and politics. This is downright pure evil. And it was a nice parallel, Emma realizing that she wants Henry, that she wants to protect Henry, feeling that for the first time, because she's always made a big deal about how she hasn't ever really looked out for anybody but number one, because of how she was raised or not raised. But the other half of this episode was about Geppetto and the love of a father for his child and protecting his child to what end? To, ironically, the end that caused Emma to be the way she is today. So it was a nice parallel.
Yeah, it's really about parenthood and how strong the bond can be between a mother or a father and a child. And that sometimes that protective love can bring people to lie and to actually make morally perhaps wrong choices, because the greater good that they perceive is the protection and the survival of their child. And so you get all these conflicting values in this episode.
I remember watching the pilot, and when it first came out, you know, I had a newborn, and the idea that here Snow gives birth to Emma, and the curse is enacting all around them. The portal is ready, and Charming, you know, rushes her out there and just manages to get her away. And they cry, you know, she got away, to protect that newborn. But that as a new mother, to imagine having your child ripped from your arms, to have to give her up, to get her to someplace better. And I know we paralleled that with what Emma did for Henry. Emma gave him up for something, for the hope of something better. And now Pinocchio, Geppetto, his is a little bit different. He's just trying to protect. It's kind of like trying to get your child out. You know, something terrible is coming and it will destroy him. And you're just trying to get him safe. For some reason, what people went through in the Holocaust went through my head too. Hiding children. All those stories like Corrie ten Boom and hiding children.
Good point, yeah. There's definitely a parallel there. And of course, the kind of moral ambiguity here is that Geppetto chooses to put the life of his child before the survival of Prince Charming and Snow White. And he strikes a deal. It's actually to trading the survival of his son, and especially the fact that his son is now a real boy, and he doesn't want to lose that. And so he strikes a deal with the Blue Fairy, and it's the first time that we've seen the Blue Fairy lie and actually become morally ambiguous as well. And so it seems that in this world of Storybrooke and Fairy Tale Land, there are no black or entirely white characters anymore. They're all kind of in the middle. They're all gray, which of course is the quintessential ingredient for great storytelling, because we too are all kind of in the middle where we're not totally good, we're not totally bad either. We're always, you know, making choices, and some of them are good and some of them are bad. And it's all about, you know, what makes us choose this or that? What are our motives? And that's kind of what I thought was brilliant in this episode. It's the complexity.
Well, and ironically, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say that, you know, if the flashbacks to before the curse, if those stories really were like as happy go lucky and black and white as we all thought they were, they wouldn't be nearly as interesting.
Exactly. <So. laughs> It's a different.
I found
spin.
It ironic that Geppetto's choice here may be the undoing. The fact that Emma didn't grow up believing in magic, believing in fairy tales, that she doesn't recognize, doesn't believe, she may not be able to break the curse.
Well, yeah, it definitely shows the chain of events, and I think it's true not just for Geppetto's choice, but for there have been many choices by the fairy tale characters that actually kind of caused the current situation. And it's the new choices in Storybrooke that might be the road to salvation. And this episode was ultimately about the choice that Emma faces now to either believe or not believe. And here at the beginning of the story, she says when August pleads, you know, you got to make a leap of faith. And he's just talking about the little tour on his motorbike, you know, and she wants to know where he will take her. She says, you know, I don't have time for faith. I need to take care of my son. And that, of course, is interesting. It's an interesting dichotomy. She thinks that there is no space in her life for faith because she wants to focus on Henry. Whereas Henry's biggest desire is that she believes. And the way that she could express her love for Henry is to actually do that. But she feels like, no, she has to shut all that out so she can focus on the whole custody thing. She doesn't see the bigger picture yet.
I say that was such a parallel to, I say, real life and how people feel, that they get so overwhelmed with the day-to-day and, you know, she just narrow focus that she can't think about all of, you know, I'm sorry, something just came on my computer. she can't focus on, you know, this big picture and this faith. And I love that scene at the end where she's with August and he's telling her and she just kind of loses it and says, yeah. I can barely handle this. You know, Henry, I can't be needed by everyone. I can't do that.
Well, and you see her struggling literally with faith, because at one point she discovers that the pragmatic approach, going to Mr. Gold and hiring him, because she's done that before, and he kind of knows how to manipulate things, so it could benefit her. When that doesn't work, she actually goes to August with the question, show me the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. How to defeat Regina. And then when he does that, when he shows her the bigger picture and that it has to do with faith, then she refuses it, and it's almost as if that is a big, too big of a leap for her right now. Mm. And so I love the way in which they have integrated all these big moral themes and just these classic clashes of interests, of values, the whole struggle into this story. I think it's really brilliantly done.
Well, if you want to talk about the parental choices, you could jump back to, was it last week, with Balefire, if... Rumpelstiltskin had gone with Balefire, none of this would be happening now either.
And he
was another parent who separates from their child.
And that was also the breaking point, was that he didn't want to trust his son. He didn't want to trust that leap of faith. He didn't want to make the leap of faith into that big green vortex. And so he clung to what he already knew and what he had, which was that power. Which ultimately, of course, is kind of it's not powerful enough to save him or to save his son or to save the universe. And so this whole story constantly pushes us in the direction of understanding that if you want to save the people you love, if you want to save the world, then it's all about letting go and about trusting and about making that leap of faith and becoming vulnerable instead of grabbing power. And you see that all the people, all the characters that hold on to power and trust in that, they're probably going to be getting the short straw. You know, they will not win. I thought it was interesting, by the way, that when we see, I think it was Emma talking to August, they're walking through the empty, kind of almost autumn-like or fall-like streets of Storybrooke. It seems to be like an eternal bad weather over there. I guess it's kind of the price you have to pay for filming in Canada.
Really long winter, fall, winter.
Yeah, it just looks cold. It's always like... But they walk past the library, and it's still closed. And you see all these windows blocked by either wood or old newspapers. And I wonder, you know, is that must be on purpose? And will we see the library open at one point? I think it needs to be, because it's symbolic of those stories are no longer read. You know, nobody reads stories. No one cares for stories anymore.
It could be an interesting character for next season.
Or perhaps it's going to be at the end of this season that somehow the library will be opened again. And I don't know.
Maybe it's supposed to be Belle. You know, Belle in the bookshop. She always, you know, read all the books.
Oh, that is a good point. Why
That's
not?
Right.
Well, and she has to come back because she's still in that basement.
Right.
Doing whatever. I don't know what she's doing there. And her
mental patient.
Her.
Yeah. Well, she's supposed to make another episode appearance, I think, one of the next two. We only have two episodes left.
Yes.
And her name shows up in the list of cast characters.
Oh, cool. Well, I'm not surprised. It's because they couldn't leave that hanging for you know, the entire interim between this season and the next one. Mm-hmm. They need to resolve
that. Did everyone just love the Mary Margaret moment where she confronted Regina at the very beginning?
Holy moly.
Oh,
that was powerful.
It just was so powerful. And it's like she was channeling Snow there, you know, and it was just...
Even in the
you find your joy in making other people miserable and you're lonely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I was like,
and that will just leave a hole in your heart. You know,
right.
It's never going to be enough. And this is the recurring theme of the hole in your heart. And then immediately afterwards, she says, "There's Henry now," as if to point us to that hole can only be filled by what this child represents. You know, and I love that she forgave Regina, even though, you know.
Again.
Probably don't want it, but it's unconditional forgiveness that she offers. And the way she
delivers
looked,
the line so sincerely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She almost reminds me of the Snow White or the Mary Margaret that we knew at the very beginning of this season. As if her innocence is kind of restored and she's no longer that ambiguous character. And it was really, really cool. And you can see that Regina is... It's the message doesn't really get to her heart yet, but you see some cracks in her harness, or is she just playing along?
I think she's starting to at least crack a little bit, because she, you know, later on she destroys the mirror.
I think so.
I think it hit her,
and it's almost as if the let's talk about that later on, when the thing that happens between her and David. But it's almost as if she no longer can live with herself, and that's why she breaks the mirror. She
keep in mind too that Henry told her to her face, "I know you're the evil queen."
That was amazing. Yeah,
and we're going to transfer you. Is this because you framed her?
Yeah,
Ten. Why? How do you think? So your daughter's age. How do you think I'm capable of doing this? Well, of course you're the evil queen.
Yeah.
I mean, there's one thing to you to know, but there's another thing for your 10-year-old to backtalk you like that and come right out and say.
One thing I'm still trying to get my brain around is, okay, she is. We've all agreed that she's. I mean, no matter where she is, whether it's Maine or Storybook Land or wherever, she is a sociopath. But she lets this kid run. I mean, she lets this kid say whatever. And is this just because because she's already killed somebody named Henry Important in her life, and she can't bear to do anything nasty again just to someone else named Henry or what?
So desperate for his love that maybe if she just keeps giving in and.
Yeah. Well, I think it's ultimately because she doesn't really have power over him. Her magic doesn't work on Henry, and nor does her parental authority work on him. He's like the quintessential free boy.
How he he's 10 years old. He runs around the town without a chaperone, without an adult with him. I know it's a small town, but still. She sure. goes off and she leaves him for the Saturday city council meetings that weren't. Mm-hmm. And she leaves him all day, and all she says is, don't hang out with your biological mother, and, you know, don't leave the house. Or she gives him certain rules. But this kid is everywhere. He shows up at a construction site. Yeah. He shows up at school. Mm-hmm. He's on a bus. He goes to Boston. No one notices he's missing. She
Dennis
is not
Menace
a good parent.
Well, it's because he's free. And he's free because he tells the truth and he is honest. And there is no second layer. There's no second agenda except for, you know, his plans to basically save the world through that. Emma. But there is it's almost he reminds me a little bit of the story of the little Jesus, you know, who runs away from his parents and they find him back like 3 days later in the temple teaching all these old guys.
I need my father's house.
But it's the same kind of behavior. He's like, he's so free. And of course he does obey the rules, but only because he thinks that's the way that he can because otherwise he might hurt other people. But I love that freedom in him. And I also thought it was interesting that when he talks to his mom, he has this little lunchbox. And did you see what was on it?
It was Tron.
It was Tron.
And it looked like an old Tron, not like the new one.
Yeah, it's the same logo. It's the same logo. But of course, Tron is a Disney property now. Yeah. I guess it always was. But the interesting thing about Tron is that Tron itself is all about these different realities and these parallel universes. I mean, Tron, for those of you that have never seen a movie, it's about this guy who is a programmer of games, and he gets sucked into his own game. And that is so that the world of the – it's not even being sucked into the computer, but sucked into the reality of a video game. And all of a sudden, he can really die if his game character dies. And so I thought it was almost perhaps a preview of what will await us next season. This is another, I think, indication that it's not just going to be about the fairy tale parallel world. This might be about a whole lot of different universes and parallel realms, as the blue fairy calls it. You know, she says at one point, this was the last magic tree in this realm. As if, you know, to imply that there are other realms. And I'm thinking back of that pivotal scene in the story with the Queen of Hearts with all these doors. Because I am like, how on earth are they going to keep us interested for another 3-4 seasons if they're wrapping up things so quickly now in Storybrooke?
Yeah.
But what are they going to wrap up this season, do we think?
Well,
because there's still a lot of story in this. And I could even see something happening where Emma actually either sees or visits the fairy tale world. I mean, I hate to say she's going to be Thomas, she's going to have to see it to believe it.
Indeed, yeah.
And here he pulls up his leg and he shows the wooden leg. He's turning back into a wooden boy. And she looks and she just sees a regular leg and he's shocked. He's like, oh my gosh, your denial goes so far.
Have we ever seen that before, by the way, that someone who doesn't believe also doesn't see the magical elements?
I think that was in a bunch of Narnia stories.
Yeah, because I'm wondering, you know, we've seen the glass of Snow White's coffin at one point. It seemed to me like, well, perhaps not everyone could see that either. Henry definitely sees all that stuff because he's a believer. Anyway, that's going to be interesting. I want to just mention a few other things here at this point. So of course there's a new story in the book. So we finally see what we already kind of guessed that when August is repairing the book, he actually adds pages and he adds the story of Pinocchio, which initially, my immediate reaction was like, well, duh, why wouldn't the story of Pinocchio, why wouldn't that be in a storybook, in a fairy tale book? And then Emma comes up with a perfect explanation. It's like, well, because we already know how it ends, so why? Perhaps that's why they left it out. So I love it that the writers kind of second guess how we are going to react to that, and they let the character in story kind of explain it away. But it's like, well, of course, everybody knows that story, so no need for it to put it in the fairy tale book, which is kind of a rubbish argument. I mean, it has all the it has Little Red Riding Hood, so it, of course it should have Pinocchio in there.
Yeah, but that implies that the story of Pinocchio ends with he became a real boy and they lived happily ever after. Mm-hmm. And so much hinges on the fact that he became a real boy, and yet it affected this huge choice, this huge pivotal moment.
Yeah. It's interesting to see at what point, of course, the boy is turned or Pinocchio is turned into a real boy. This happens after the attack by the whale. They don't get really swallowed up by the whale. At least we don't see that. And they end up on shore, and, well, Pinocchio is dead, apparently, or he looks dead, and then the fairy tale arrives. And that's the moment that he's turned into a real boy. It's kind of a very big departure of the story that we know. And
she tells him that you'll be a real boy as long as you do three things. As long as you're brave, you're truthful, and you're unselfish.
Yes.
Well, he failed on all three counts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's kind of funny is, again, the Blue Fairy was setting him up, because those are three things that Pinocchio, you know, kind of had trouble with. Mm-hmm. And so maybe the nose and so then he becomes a real boy and he's told to do these things. And then his father sends him into a whole different world by himself with no parental support to watch a baby. And, you know, here you're 10, go with an infant, raise it.
Right.
Somewhere else, and oh yeah, you know, you gotta be brave,
love and protect.
And then, of course, Geppetto is not being too unselfish, because if he were really unselfish, he would have done exactly what the fairy tale had told him to do, and he doesn't.
Which was to have faith. He should have had faith that if they sent Snow or Charming to guide and protect Emma, that they would have been able to break the curse. And what would happen to my boy in this world without magic? Well, I don't know. Well, that takes a leap of faith, and he didn't
do it. You need to be brave. And at one point, the fairy tale actually literally says it. It says, all we can do is have faith that the Savior will restore all that we have lost. And he doesn't want to put his faith in that. He wants kind of like a reassurance right now, and he's willing to bargain for it.
Mm-hmm.
What surprised me is that the fairy, the blue fairy. Did I just call her a fairy tale? The blue fairy just goes along with it, and she actually, accepts the deal. I guess she has no choice, because her interest is, of course, to save Emma. Otherwise, all hope is lost. If Emma doesn't survive the curse, then or at least doesn't remember who she is, then that there's no way that she can restore things. The interesting thing is that we now have a prophecy, right? There are two prophecies in this episode. There's the initial prophecy that when Emma turns 28. That's when she needs to believe. And that's when her battle begins with Regina, and where she has to undo the curse. And 28 years old, why exactly 28 years old? I don't know. Doesn't seem to be a symbolic number or anything. But that's the first prophecy. And then, of course, the second prophecy is that she ultimately will restore everything that they have lost. So will the end of Once Upon a Time as a TV series be the kind of resurgence of the fairy tale world? Will our world stop to exist, or will somehow, magical castles pop up in our world? Will the entire world turn into one big Disney world? I don't know. Is the emergence of Disney World, is that going to be the fulfillment of this prophecy? I mean, it's a big thing for her to promise that if Emma breaks the curse, what will that mean? Will it mean that fairy tale world is back, or will it be that certain values of the fairy tale world will be restored in our world?
And one big question that we don't know is, how does she break the curse? I mean, is it simply believing, or does she have to do something? And I think that's a whole, I mean, these writers could go into a whole nother dimension with that. You know, what does it take to break the curse?
True. The end of this season might just be Emma believing. And then, of course, the next season could be the entire battle of you know, how this curse took a long time and a lot of effort to put into effect. And so perhaps saving us from that curse might also be quite a struggue. But they're hinting at the fact that Regina now is kind of breaking and something is changing in her. And I wonder if they can keep that up for another season to make her, you know, the same evil character, because she's always doing the same spiel. It's
yeah.
I feel that her story arc needs some kind of closure and some resolution.
I have a thought on that. So Belle, according to the internet, is that character is back in the season finale. My thought is, what if Gold finds out that Regina has had her this whole time? That could start just a holy war between the two of them. And maybe Gold becomes the true evil person in the show instead of Regina.
Or the savior, unwillingly. I don't know. Because he too is just one of these characters that has fallen. And there needs to be a redemption for him too, in one way or another. And I think he
might go darker before he gets redeemed.
Could be. I mean, they have to. He's such a popular character, so you can't have Once Upon a Time without Rumpelstiltskin.
No.
And his machinations. So and he's interesting enough to keep him around. But Regina, I feel that her kind of evil look, staring down on Emma. Okay, well, we've seen that now. I think that's kind of enough.
Well, where are all the other evil queens and evil witches or whatever from fairy tales? Where are they?
Yeah.
I mean, Maleficent, did she, something happened to her? We've seen her, but did she die? I can't remember.
We don't know. That's true. There's a whole whole collection of other evildoers that they can bring in to the story at the end of the season.
I guess you'd think the Queen of Hearts would show up somewhere here at this point.
Oh, that's true. Never found out who she was.
Right, because even though they were in Wonderland, which is someplace else entirely, the Mad Hatter somehow got sucked up and plunked down into Storybrooke. So you'd think the Queen of Hearts would be here too.
Hmm. Yeah, well, they definitely have something in store for us with the Queen of Hearts. It's not an accident that she was covered. So, but who is it?
Huh. Okay. So we still need to cover one creepy thing about this episode.
Okay.
And I'm guessing it's not the fact that Regina was wearing blue.
No, I don't care
Emma
about that.
Emma was wearing red.
I'm talking about the creepiness of the whole David-Regina thing.
Yes.
I'm just so happy that I'm so happy that didn't go anywhere.
I'm just sitting there thinking, have you not talked to Mary Margaret or Emma or Henry to know that she set up? I'm just like, how clueless is this guy?
I think the purpose was
to tell us how she found him, because this whole episode was about what the lengths will go to protect or to, and it was all about lying to protect people, and she's lying because obviously she's the queen and she's the one who did the curse. But remember where he was when the curse was enacted? He had just been stabbed or run through with a sword by one of the queen's guards, and so he's lying lifeless. Well, she's feeding them this whole lie about how she found him on the side of the road. And if she forgot her cell phone and she almost didn't go back. But
yeah,
it was 28 years ago. Did we have cell phones 28 years ago?
That's a good point, actually. No.
but they were the size of Henry.
Wow, that's a very good point. No cell phones. Gosh, David is really clueless. And the story that she tells actually mirrors the way that August found Emma. It's the same thing. At least it's the story that he told the newspapers, that Emma was lying on the side of the road. And so Regina just copies that story.
Yeah, nobody questioned this little boy found a baby on the side of the road, and he's an orphan, she's an orphan. Right, where'd the little boy come from?
Suspension
of disbelief.
None of
that's mentioned. They're just thrown into foster care?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Well, we don't know exactly The only thing that we can deduce from what we see is that not only Emma is thrown into foster care, but also the little boy himself, apparently, because, you know, his parents are nowhere to be found. And so, but he really escapes.
You really felt for August in this. I mean, he was, like I said earlier, he was basically set up. I mean, he was a 10-year-old child. Was he 10? 8?
7. He was 7.
7. Okay.
Mm-hmm. 7.
You know, okay, even worse, a 7-year-old child that here take care of this infant and raise her to believe in all of this and, oh, yeah, be unselfish. What was it? Unselfish, brave, and truthful.
True.
And
yeah.
Go out into this strange world. And, you know, and then here he has all of this guilt. He ran off into, I forgot what he called it, but basically like in the Pinocchio cartoon where he goes to the Wonderland place.
Yeah,
carnival place.
Which, by the way, now according to this version, is actually in our world, the Pleasure Island,
yeah.
Which I thought was brilliant. You know, he's just feasting and being the prodigal son almost.
It was probably Vegas.
That was on the other side of the world. I think it was in Australia somewhere, Sydney.
Oh, he went to Phuket or someplace like that.
Yeah, I just thought it was, you know, and here he's suffering from this immense guilt now that we hadn't seen in previous episodes. That
true,
you know. That he did not do what he was sent there. His father saved him for this purpose, and he couldn't do it. He couldn't handle it.
Well, you know, there are very interesting parallels here when it comes to the I think one of the overarching theme of the episode, and that has to do with vocation. What is your vocation? What is your calling to do? And being brave and truthful and unselfish. Those are the virtues you need to follow your vocation. And this episode tells the story of several people that forsake their vocation or refuse it. And of course, August is kind of the main character here. And you can hardly blame him because he was so young and he wanted to get out of there. But he does formally forget about his mission to protect Emma. Walks away, ends up with all this guilt, turns back into a wooden puppet, because that's, you know, that he breaks basically the deal that he had with the blue fairy. But his father, of course, did the same thing. He too kind of broke his vocation to help out, to fix. You know, the word fixing comes back several times. And so instead of fixing the world, he thinks about his own interest, which is basically he wants to keep his son alive and he wants Pinocchio to be a real boy. And so he thinks of himself. And also kind of betrays the deal that he had with the blue fairy by putting Pinocchio in the wardrobe. And then, but the big counterpoint of August's refusal to do what he was supposed to do, and his remorse afterwards, and now he's actually back to do what he should have done all along, is Emma, and Emma too is called to be the savior. I mean, it's crystal clear in this episode, so it's her calling, and actually there's a prophecy about her, so and she refuses. To act upon it. She refuses her vocation to be the savior. And he says, you know, I can't handle this. It's too much. It's too big of a picture. I need to focus on the boy. And it's almost as if what she does at the end, running away with Henry, is not just running away from Regina, but it's running away for who she is supposed to be. And she leaves the battlefield. She goes out of Storybrooke. She takes Henry with her. And this sets us up in a classic narrative to the moment, and this is almost a bit too late in the story, where you, as a viewer or as a reader, are like, oh, all hope is lost. Because the savior refuses, you know, she's gone, and so there's no more hope for the story. And of course, we will see her returning if this follows a classic narrative sequence. And then there is going to be this moment next episode where everybody is panicking because, you know, Emma is gone, and then she'll of course gloriously return in the finale, right? That's what I think. But I love that. And just, you know, you are our only hope. says August to Emma, and yet she refuses to embrace that. She refuses to be Obi-Wan Kenobi in this story.
I was, you know, just thinking that when you said that word.
My husband and I turned to each other and said that exactly after we're watching the episode.
You are our only hope. Yeah, well, it's just unavoidable this time.
Okay, speaking of other show crossover things, did you, and I don't know if it was or not, but when Pinocchio came out of the tree and he's standing there and the plane goes over.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yep.
I had at least one other website who claimed it was an Oceanic.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah.
So, I mean, if the candy bars are the same, I'm assuming they put the same plane from Lost in the show. So, I thought that was
I freeze framed it. I couldn't really tell. It was a bit too blurry, but perhaps on the Blu-ray we'll be able to see the flight number.
And there's the
But
go ahead, the flight number.
Well, no, perhaps the flight number is on there, or perhaps the logo of Oceania can be seen, but I just couldn't make it out. But I wouldn't be surprised if it is actually Oceanic flight something.
Well, and I think David brought this up earlier, but the Narnia reference, that the tree was carved into a wardrobe.
Yes, definitely Narnia.
Through the wardrobe. I didn't see a lion and a witch, but well, okay, Regina's the witch. Who's the lion? But they went through the wardrobe to go to the other world.
Mm-hmm.
That's funny. I just read The Magician's Nephew, and I didn't even catch that.
Oh, yeah. Well, it must be a reference. Speaking of the trees, by the way, according to the Blue Fairy, there's only one tree left, one magical tree. We also get the revelation that Pinocchio was also created out of wood from another similar magical tree. I would have thought that would be enough to protect him from the curse, but apparently not. But but when we are taken to the forest where this last tree is standing, we see two other tree stumps, implying, not really kind of proving it, but it implies that, okay, we know that one magical tree was cut to make Pinocchio. So what's the other one? You know, tree number one, Pinocchio. Tree number two, the one that's still standing there, is going to be the wardrobe. What's that third tree? I have no idea, but I'm pretty sure that they did that on purpose. So could there be another character that was made out of this tree? Something with a wooden heart? I don't know.
But you're right. She did say an enchanted tree, much like the one you carved Pinocchio from.
Well, and then they show us two stumps. So I'm like, there has to be something must have happened with that other third tree in the picture. But I just couldn't come up. It's probably something that we'll see later on.
Well, one of the things I told Lisa is you can imagine that wherever the writers are located, officed, housed up, whatever. There's got to be one heck of a room with nothing but a big timeline and connections stuck on the wall. I mean, everything ties into each other so beautifully that they've got to have the outlines for at least the first two or three seasons.
And then probably
what was that movie? A Beautiful Mind with all the string.
Yes.
Oh yeah, with Russell Crowe, and you go in and it's all connected.
I can see them sitting there with the string running.
And I'm afraid that there's not just one timeline. I think that there are multiple overlapping universes, and we will see in the next season that there are actually all sorts of tie-ins with this current season. And we will see other realms as well. Gosh,
Shelley and I were arguing. Start to send people.
We were arguing about timeline because I said, "What if Balefire is Henry's father?"
No, it can't be.
See, but why not?
He's been in a world without magic for as long as Geppetto has been alive, and Geppetto is not a young man. He's got to be at least 65, really 70 years old.
It could have preserved him, too. None of these other people seem to
Geppetto
age.
Geppetto looks almost the same age as he was in the fairy tale world.
Well, Geppetto is. But remember that when Jiminy Cricket Jiminy Cricket was doing deals with Mr. Gold. Bale had already gone through to the world without magic. Mr. Gold was – I mean, Rumpelstiltskin. And Jiminy Cricket, remember, turned Geppetto's parents – he was part of the whole turning Geppetto into puppets. So then he became the conscience for Geppetto. Geppetto was like 8, 9, 10 years old. Geppetto is old now. So there's a good 40 50 years.
Right.
Between when Bale left.
Yes, and yes. I see what you mean.
I'm going to say leap of faith. It'd be really cool. That he could be Henry's father. He could.
I will be disappointed if the writers don't bring what happened to Bale in the World Without Magic somewhere, our world, maybe not. If they don't bring it out.
He's got to be around.
I'd be shocked if it turns out to be.
See, if Bale was Henry's father, that makes Gold and Regina. Oh, no. Regina's not actually related. I don't know. Right. But Gold would be his grandfather.
Golden Snow.
Golden Snow. Or Gold could be his.
Holy cow. That is just scary. That is just really scary that they're all related. It's just one big family.
That just turns it into a soap opera.
Yeah. Well, they usually do that on shows. They like to tie it all up in a neat little bow for you. You know, well, not these writers, maybe.
I don't know. This sounds a little bit too much like Leia is my sister.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Father, on that note, it's after 1 o'clock here, and I'm at the office, so I have got to run.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us today. We if you don't mind, we'll just go on and chat a little bit more for about 15
y'all
minutes.
Keep going. I'm sorry I can't stick it out to the end, but I'll catch y'all next week.
Okay, thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Now, so the mystery of the tree stumps, Mike in the chat room says, I'm stumped. Very good one. Deborah, by the way, in the chat room noticed that the whale that we see has blue eyes, just like Dr. Whale has blue eyes. Coincidence? Probably not.
We still don't know who Dr. Whale is.
Yeah, it must be the whale. It's too obvious. But does he remember? That's the question. And, we've seen animals turn into human beings with, of course, Jiminy Cricket. So why not the whale as well? And I like the fact that he's kind of predatory towards women. That's a nice metaphor for the whale. That flirting scene between Regina and Prince Charming, a.k.a. Regina and David. I was wondering, is Regina actually really manipulating him, playing him? Or is there also kind of a genuine attraction? And is she opening up to love? Or I don't know. What do you think?
I wondered if she was lonely because Sydney was the one who loved her and followed her around. And now he is in jail. They mentioned that at the beginning.
Right.
And so now she's kind of without anyone to, you know, fawn over her. And and the huntsman's gone. Graham's gone. And he was the same way. So maybe a little desperation.
Well, I was thinking perhaps
she put together a fake. She pretended to have a fake note from her child. If that didn't say desperation,
that was weird. I was like, why is the note empty? But you're right; it's a fake note. She wrote it. Oh my gosh!
Maybe
I was like, this must be magic.
I
really, honestly, I thought it must have been magical ink. You know, can he write an invisible? No, she wrote that. She did that to play David. Good catch.
I don't know. The whole thing felt weird. I didn't like it in this episode. I think that there were other ways that she could have tried to manipulate him for the sake of the plot line. I really didn't, he just makes me cringe sometimes. I'm like, how clueless can you be? Really? I mean, come on.
At least we now know that Regina can cook a wicked lasagna. Which is, by the way, of course, an Italian recipe. I wonder if she got it from Geppetto. Who, by the way, seems to be a true... He has a really great Italian accent. I wonder if the actor is Italian or not. But sounds very convincing to me.
I don't think he is, but he did it. I really love that scene at the end, too. He was so reassuring, too. It just seemed like such a father-son moment of forgiveness, even though he doesn't know he's... that's his son. But it really was a really nice, bonding moment for them.
Yeah.
That I was glad to have.
The acting in this episode was out of this world. It was so good. There were just really beautiful moments in there. And it's just that I think is the biggest asset of this season. It's not just the story, but it's also the quality of the acting. And in that respect, again, it reminds me so much of Lost, where the acting was what actually made the story work. How ridiculous sometimes the whole plot line was. It's like, oh, come on. But, you know, they just pulled it off. You wanted to believe. You want to believe because they're so good.
Right. Well, and we didn't have Deborah to talk about it, but we always, she and I have always talked about who can leave Storybrooke. And we saw August and Emma leave together because that was the first time we've seen Emma leave since she's been there.
Absolutely.
And then at the end of the episode, we didn't talk about that she took off with Henry.
Yep.
And I can't remember, but I think we saw them again past that darn Storybrooke sign, didn't they?
Could be. it's interesting because all the other characters can't, but Emma, Henry, August, they kind of have a special place in a special status. So they're free characters. They can do whatever they want. It was interesting to see the place where the little diner that they where apparently she was carried to by August, and thought it was interesting to that sounds like a phone.
Sorry about that.
No problem. The house or the foster care where these two children live, that was a weird scene because we get introduced to a number of characters. We see this guy called Mr. Raskind. Like, Raskind, who is that? And I tried to Google it, and I mean Raskind is a name, is an existing name. I think it's a more of a Jewish name. Kind, of course, in German means child. Ras, I have no idea what that means, but anyway, I was like, is this a character that we were supposed to recognize? Is this someone from the Pinocchio story? But he isn't. And then there in the IMDb database, we see actually a list of the actors for this particular episode. And there's also mention of a character called Gordy. And Gordy is the boy that has stolen the money. And but again, I was like, is Gordy supposed to be one of the two, you know, what's their name again? The fox and the other character in Pinocchio that seduce him to basically be disobedient and be not truthful. I don't know. Deborah says...
That's what I took it as, the two that he went off with in the, you know, cartoon that we're familiar with.
Could be, but Mr. Raskind, he reminded me a little bit of the creepy circus dude. What's his name?
Was he the wolf?
No, I mean in the circus owner. I forgot his name. I'm sure that Deborah will type it in the chat room now. but it was not the same name, which was a bit confusing. Monstro. No, Monstro was the whale. Stromboli.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe they couldn't get legal clearance to use the name for some reason.
I don't know. Why wouldn't they? Because it's Disney, so...
It's true, they own it.
Deborah says, Raskin sounds a bit like Radagon from The Great Mouse Detective. Seems a bit far-fetched. But anyway, those are mysterious names, and I just can't figure it out. And even the meaning of Gordy, which is, of course, from Gordon, doesn't give us a clue. It's a Gaelic name, which means large fortification. That's like, yeah, whatever. So I don't know if we'll see this character ever again. Perhaps it's just a slight... Oh, wait a minute. Oh, Deborah has an interesting character. Oh, Deborah. I think Deborah solved it. Deborah says, this guy, Raskin, could be Stromboli. Because, of course, I'm not sure if it's Stromboli or Stromboli. But this of course, is the real world version of the character that might be Stromboli in the fairy tale world. Deborah writes, his kids could be his puppets. And his foster kids make him money. And he keeps Emma in a cage like a crib. And actually, there is a cage in Rumpelstiltskin's or in Mr. Gold's store as well, which wasn't there before. There's a white cage, white wooden bird cage. So perhaps we'll see that story later on. Who knows? Perhaps they're just setting us up. Yeah, I think that must be it. Raskind must be Stromboli somehow. Although I kind of missed a big beard. Interesting. Let's see, what else have I got in my notes here before we wrap up? Well, I noticed a big number of mirrors in this episode. This time not referring to the magical mirror, but almost mirrors as the symbols for that which makes you face yourself the way you truly are, or to face your true self. When August and Emma are on the motorbike, they talk to each other through the mirror. And I thought that is a very cool because this whole TV series is about mirrors and a mirror identity and a mirror world, and stories work like mirrors. They reveal us who we truly are, what our destiny is. And so in this case, when August talks to Emma, it's all about, you know, what is your true destiny? What is your true vocation? And the mirror reflects it, and Emma is just scared out of her mind of what the mirror is showing her. And so she doesn't want to. And I think the mirror in the scene where it's smashed by Regina is the same thing. The mirror there is almost a symbol of what Mary Margaret does. Mary Margaret shows Regina a possible exit out of that evilness. She by forgiving her, she actually offers Regina basically a new start. You know, I forgive you, so you can now make a true choice. You're no longer, no more bonds. I don't put any claim on you. You can choose again to be a good person. And the mirror, and it's after this kind of flirtation with David that you can see her crack a little bit more. And then she looks in the mirror, and it's as if she is like, no, I don't want this. And she smashes the mirror. She doesn't want that alternate future for herself. But will she continue to crack just like the mirror cracked? I have got a feeling that we will see her redemption before the end of the season.
We only have 2 episodes.
Yeah, that's a lot to do. Is the final episode just 1 hour, or is it going to be like an extra long episode? Do we know?
I don't know.
Hey guys, I have to jump off too. So
you have to jump off.
I have to let you guys wrap up too.
Okay, go to your pleasure island. Leave us alone in this reality. Forsake your vocation to be on this podcast.
Insert other guilt trip statements here.
Yes. And don't be surprised if your leg starts hurting. No, actually,
am I the only one who got the guilt trip? No.
No, don't worry about it. I think it's a perfect moment, actually, to wrap up the show. Thank our listeners. Oh, no, wait a minute. No, we can't wrap up. There is
I'll let you guys wrap up. Talk to you later.
Absolutely. There is one person who will take your place, David, and it is the person who always calls in with that magical voice. And, of course, our longtime listeners know who I'm talking about. I'm talking about Glenn, and he's got some feedback, and I haven't listened to it yet. I just verified that the entire message was recorded this time, because last time the recording broke off. But let's listen to what Glenn has to say about this episode.
Hello there, this is Glenn, and this audio is for Once Upon a Time. The writing skill in this latest episode was tremendous, but I have to be honest and say that I hoped there was far more to August than just a fairy tale character. But I can see there was no other way August could fit into the events like he ultimately did, and it worked out very well. Geppetto was quite devious, wasn't he? He clearly didn't want Pinocchio to be a bad boy, to lie and to run with mischief, but apparently it's quite all right to lie and to protect the ones we love. If push came to shove, I wonder if I would do it too. Well, come to think of it, I love myself and have lied to protect me before, but because I do it doesn't make it right. On the subject of lying, I was reminded about the scene in last week's episode between Rumpelstiltskin and Blue Star. Rumpelstiltskin demanded the Blue Fairy to let him follow his son. She tells him he can't. He retorts with, "That's a lie!" Now here's the Blue Fairy saying, "We don't do that." Well, it's evident in this episode that she certainly does. We know that the tree cabinet can transport 2 people, but after Geppetto strikes a deal with Blue Star, Pinocchio is sent through and Blue Star tells Snow and charming quite specifically that the tree can take only one. Now, a thought on the oddest scene in this episode. Regina and David? I remember thinking when Regina played helpless victim, prying on David's kindness and luring him to her home, I said, surely she's not going to try and seduce him. I was shocked. Well, I'm glad that David fled. Hey, I've just had a thought. Did David leave his jacket? If he did, will we get a retelling of David and Potiphar's wife? How would that be? I also found myself wondering if there was any applesauce in the lasagna. I was listening to another podcast reviewing The Return, and it reminded its listeners of the often used phrase, I believe it when I see it. And they discussed that until Emma believes she won't see the evidence of Fairyland in Storybrooke. That was a great insight because that's exactly how it played out in The Stranger. How profound was it when August pulls up his pant leg to show the hood and she only sees flesh? If finally... I love this bit. Emma to August, how does the story end? With you believing, followed shortly by our Star Wars reference, hey, Father. You are our only hope. Then you're all screwed. Despite myself, I laughed. Let me end on a couple of predictions. The first one is on Emma's kidnapping of Henry. The car will not leave Storybrooke because Henry will convince Emma that she must stay. And prediction two, the curse will be broken. Okay, so that isn't hard. But hang on. It will not be broken at the death of Regina. It will be broken some other way, and all the Fairyland characters will be able to leave Storybrooke, but Regina. She'll be all alone and nobody to control. Bye-bye, dairies.
Bye-bye, and thank you so much. Great feedback. Oh, predictions. I love predictions. What is going to happen? How are they going to wrap this up? I'm thinking, you know, every magic has its price. And so if you want to break a curse, you will probably have to pay a price that is greater than the price that was paid in order to put it into effect, to actually carry out the curse. And so could the ultimate price that has to be paid be the life of Regina? Could this all end with her realizing what she truly has to do, and that is to sacrifice herself, perhaps to save Henry? And to make sure that Henry gets, you know, his true... Or will she sacrifice herself for Emma so that Henry will have a mother? I've got the feeling that that is definitely something that would be in the line of where this story has been going so far. But I think that the person who caused the curse is perhaps the only person who can actually break it. And this whole prophecy about Emma, I'm thinking, you know, sometimes prophecies are coming true in a different way than you expect. And perhaps Emma is the savior, but in a different way than we think she is. I mean, that would be a nice twist if
it would.
Instead of her, you know, having some kind of magical power in order to break the curse, perhaps she is ultimately the savior because she's instrumental in, I don't know, perhaps what happens to her and then what Emma does to undo what she has caused herself and thereby finding redemption or something like that. I don't know. It's all very entangled in my mind, but I've got the strong feeling that we will have an amazing conclusion of the episode, of the season. And I was reading one of the blog posts about this, and it ended with, it was just a recap of the episode, and then the writer ends like this: with only two episodes left, things are certainly escalating. I just hope that we will somehow get a satisfying payoff, even if the curse isn't broken at the end of this season. When I spoke to Raphael Sbarge, who plays Jiminy Cricket, aka Archie Hopper, he promised a finale that will blow people's minds. I'm looking forward to seeing what that will mean for the second season.
Ooh, I like predictions like that.
Yeah. The one thing I'm very confident of is that it is going to be amazing and it will shock us and it'll set up next season to make us tune in. We won't be able to wait for the show to come back in August or September.
I think there needs to be a huge cliffhanger or a revelation, something that we've not seen coming. It could be either something that's been under our noses for the entire time, which is always the most perfect way to end the season. It's like, oh, can't believe we didn't see that. Just like with the initials of August, you know, a real boy. It's like, gosh.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Oh, that's what we uncovered last week. And it's actually, you know, his initials are it's August, what is it? ARB, a real boy. And so that was the clue to his name. So, could be something like that. Or what they could do, and that this is more conventional in the world of TV series, is that there will be all of a sudden a totally new element. Oh, by the way, it was AWB, a wooden boy.
Oh, okay.
Anyway. Thanks, Mike. It could be a totally new element. So then when you think that the story is wrapped up, you get this deus ex machina that just completely turns around everything and opens up a whole new, you know, line of stories. And this is what they did a lot in Battlestar Galactica. You would think at the end of a season that you knew exactly where they would pick up the story, and then the next season starts, and then all of a sudden it's like 2 years later. It's like, what? 2 years later? What? It's a totally different situation. And it's so completely not what you thought would happen. So perhaps that will be something that they can do.
I think they're going to do something like that with us. They're going to twist us so that we are all excited and can't wait.
Of course.
And you have to go back and watch the whole first season again to see why you didn't see it coming. You know.
I think there has to be something with the Queen of Hearts. There has to be something with those doors. That was way too intriguing and filled with all sorts of promises. That would be crazy if that didn't return somehow. And it feels so pivotal to me with all these alternate realities and different realms. Plenty of realms for plenty of seasons, hopefully. Well, that wraps it up for this show. Thank you so much for listening. Go to our website, onceuponatime.sqpn.com, for previous and future episodes. Leave us a note there or write a review on iTunes. Thank you for all your support. We'll be back very soon with another episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. Bye-bye now.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.